Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody is doing well on what's been an overcast, sort of gloomy-looking Wednesday. And I guess that's sort of appropriate after last night's basketball over at Neville Arena. It was a game that Dan, we didn't make it in there until near midway of the first half. And by that time, Auburn had relinquished its only lead of the game, which happened for 20 seconds or so. And it was
after a start that made you think you weren't going to see Auburn lead very much at all.
No, you're right. I'm right. We were listening on the way over. I mean, first four shots. Vandy made their first four shots of the ball game. Shot lights out first half. And Auburn, like we said, they led for 20 seconds and then trailed by double digits from 2/3 of the way through the first half until well into the second half, made a run, cut it to 6. It stretched back up to double digits, made one more run, and cut it to 4. Mm-hmm.
Vanderbilt had an answer every time.
Vandy did, and then a technical on Stephen Pearl pretty much, pushed the margin back to double figures, and it stayed about like that. Auburn ended up losing by 8, 84-76.
A huge 3 from Vanderbilt, followed by a technical foul on Stephen.
After Auburn cut it to 4 on the inbounds, Auburn was trapping in the backcourt, and a foul was called. Yep. And I think that is what Stephen Pearl was not happy with, that foul being called, and continued to talk. He said in the post game that the official thought he cursed at him. He said he didn't think he had, but he still, I was talking with the Sandersons up in Tuscaloosa today, and Wimp said, one thing you learn, or you better learn before too long as a head coach, is not just what you say, but how you say things to certain officials.
Yeah, and it's, I don't want to make the officiating too much of.
No,
the,
I mean Auburn was down 9. Was down 9 at that point because they hit they after that foul was called, they scored to make it 6. Auburn did not score. No. Vandy hit that big 3 you're talking about. So it was 9 then. It's not like, that tee, was the difference in the ball game.
And it was physical around the basket, but I think Auburn, one of the big problems from last night, I talked about after Alabama, I was of the opinion the defense is a much bigger issue than the offense. The offense has done its job in most of the conference games, with the exceptions, I think, of Tennessee and Missouri. But for the most part, you'd gotten winning offense in SEC play in most of these games. I don't think you really got winning offense for most of last night. And you're talking about a team that went 4 of 18 from 2 in the first half. A team that really struggled around the basket to finish against Vanderbilt. A team that there were times when Auburn was able to connect from the outside, but by and large, it was disjointed half court offense. It was a bad night offensively for Keyshawn Hall.
Yes, I mean he was 0 for 8. He was 0 for 8 inside the 3-point line.
I actually thought Tahad was playing pretty well in the second half, as far as doing a lot of the things that you expect Tahad Pettiford to do to get you back into it. But no, I mean it was a. It was a night where Auburn just didn't have it offensively, and in sharp contrast to a Vanderbilt team that seemed to have a lot of that. They could hit those open shots,
especially early on. I think ended up under 50%. They were in the 55-60% range midway through the second half, and Auburn played a little better defensively, and interestingly, you mentioned Keyshawn Hall struggling offensively. He was not in there down the stretch when Auburn was making that run.
Yeah, a really interesting development from last night that after his his worst game of the season, you know, and a game where, I mean, Keyshawn Hall went 0-for-8 from two, and had, you know, he really struggled to establish, and we would say going into last night, like, paint touches for players like Keyshawn Hall are maybe Auburn's most reliable source of offense. It's something that this team needs to be the bread and butter of this offense, because they've struggled shooting jumpers, right? You would hope that being able to dump it down to Keyshawn Murphy and Keyshawn Hall would be your reliable, your easiest way to get points. And for Keyshawn Hall to go 0-for-8 from two, even when he's rebounding and even when he draws a couple of fouls, it wasn't working last night. You know, Vanderbilt had answers defensively for him, and when it's not working for him offensively, I think it only magnifies defensive problems that have been there
right
throughout the season.
And one of the things that Stephen Pearl was mentioning after the ball game was with Keyshawn struggling at close range, it really made the offense even more disjointed. Yeah. Because, you know, he's at his best driving, drawing contact, drawing fouls, and scoring. Well, he wasn't scoring, and the fouls weren't being called. He shot a few free throws, but not nearly as many as he's used to. I mean, Vandy went to the line more times than Auburn. They hit a great percentage of their free throws too. I mean, this is crazy to think. They go 26 for 30 and miss two in a row down the stretch. I mean, that's about the only thing fans had to cheer for. It sounded like the biggest roar from the jungle came like in the last minute or so when a Vandy player missed two free throws to get gooey fries.
Yeah, it was – well, and Vanderbilt had the perfect start if you're trying to take the jungle out of it. And the jungle, I thought that during that run in the last 10 minutes, you know, when Auburn was able to cut it to four, like you saw the crowd
yep.
get back into
yes.
it and try to will Auburn back in. And had Auburn pulled off the comeback, if it had been enough in the last few minutes, I think there would have been tremendous credit given to the crowd,
for
their impact. But no, it just seemed like when Auburn was starting to make the plays where you think, okay, Vanderbilt needs a basket here. Vanderbilt needs...
They couldn't get that stop.
How about this? How many times did Vanderbilt break the press? Like, over and over again when Auburn
right.
decided, okay, we're going to ratchet things up and we're going to try to either force a turnover or force or trap it and get a timeout or a 10-second call, you know, try anything that you can get out of the press. Felt like Vanderbilt was
Vandy, I think, only had seven turnovers in the game.
And they were across the front court with numbers over and over again, which didn't help things defensively. You know, I was thinking at some point, it's like, you know, maybe you give up on this idea of pressing and just get back and play half-court defense, because it was not working last night. Now, Vanderbilt's got, you heard Andy Burcham say it yesterday, Vanderbilt may have the best tandem of guards.
Yes, and that helps an awful lot against anybody that wants to press.
Yeah, and if you're trying to press and you're trying to force turnovers in the backcourt, having two guys that you trust, and having some pretty good depth too, but having players like Tanner and Nichols that you know you can flip it to, and they can get it across the timeline, it's a big help. But it wasn't working last night, and it felt like it was hard to, aside from, again, I thought a spirited second half from Tahad and a sneaky good game from Elijah Freeman, even though he didn't hit shots.
Yeah, he led Auburn with eight rebounds, and I think he was he had the best plus-minus on the team. I think he was plus eight.
Yeah, a Chaney Johnson-esque game from Elijah Freeman, who, yeah, I mean, he's also struggling to hit jumpers, but it's a little bit like what Stephen was saying about Sebastian earlier this year, where you're getting physical,
Elijah
dirty
was the
work.
Only player on the Auburn roster that was a plus in the plus minus last night.
And he's,
of course,
and
I mean, you lose by eight, you would sort of, and you're only playing, you did play eight, you played Simon Walker for a few minutes, but everybody else was on the negative side.
Yeah, but think about it. Elijah was plus eight in a game you lost by eight.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, I mean, in his 28 minutes.
He was plus eight in 28 minutes.
So, I mean, I think that even without impacting the offense with scoring, he still was somebody who...
Yes, that's not insignificant at all.
Vanderbilt had a much tougher time. I think Steven said this in the postgame press conference. Vanderbilt had a much tougher time scoring when Elijah Freeman was on the floor.
Yes, indeed.
And I mean maybe that's a veiled message to Keyshawn Hall, who wasn't out there for those, you know, for a lot of those minutes in the final. You know, that includes that he was out there during Auburn's rally. You know, Auburn outscores.
Was it 12 minutes? The last 12 minutes.
It is
that Keyshawn wasn't out there.
Yes, he does not. He checks out with 12. I think it's almost 13. Right. It's over 12 and a half that he's out and does not,
before the under 12 timeout,
does not return, and Auburn outscores Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. From the moment that Keyshawn Hall checks out of that game. Now, it's not enough because Vanderbilt had built a lead at that point, but that's something
they'd gotten up 15.
Yeah, I think that's something and it was on the verge of getting ugly, mm-hmm. right? Like Vanderbilt was building a lead and hitting shots, and it was it's losing back-to-back home games for the first time. I think it's the first.
I saw a couple of things. It's the first time since the COVID year,
sure.
But the first time in front of crowds at Auburn Arena, Neville Arena. Before it was Neville Arena, it was back 2017. It's the last time that Auburn played in front of really big crowds at home and lost back-to-back
conference games. And that's the tail end of the dark ages, right?
Yes.
Because, I mean, you're talking about, 17, 18.
Look, these are it's not like these are bad teams that Auburn lost to or anything.
No,
but you've still lost back-to-back conference games in three at home in three straight.
Right, and this is the, 17, 18 is when Auburn starts winning, competing for the conference every year. So you got to go back before then to find a pair of home losses when Auburn Arena was at capacity, was at full. And it really wasn't, the crowds weren't really Auburn Arena crowds back then,
no.
right? When you think about what it is now.
At
so,
all.
I mean, so this is, I mean, these are the first two losses, back to back in front of what we know as the jungle. As
the sellout, wild crowds.
And they're both quad one losses, and they're both games where Auburn was within striking distance late, so overreacting is probably a mistake. But I think if your concerns about the things that you were concerned about, I'll tell you what, things you were concerned about coming out of Tennessee, you probably don't feel better about those things having watched the team lose.
You're right about that.
In two straight games and seeing, I was thinking that fatigue was a big factor. I don't think fatigue was a huge factor last night. Yes, they did.
But Auburn did seem sluggish early on, didn't they?
But
we weren't there for the first 9 or 10 minutes, but even for the rest of that first half, Auburn didn't look as quick. And you go, they had a short turnaround. Yeah. Well, so did Vandy. Vandy was on the road. Vandy had gotten beaten at home and was on the road and looked. They just looked quicker and sharper than Auburn did.
There was a crispness lacking from the Auburn offense in the first half. Now when you're missing shots around the basket, that's going to happen too, right?
Yeah,
like if you're doing everything right as an offense and getting the look you want in the paint. And again, it was one of the first numbers Steven cited in the postgame. Like when you go 4 of 18 from two as an offense in the first half, like there was a stretch where it's like, boy, you're lucky. Considering how you're shooting and how Vanderbilt's shooting, this lead could be 20. Like this could be a game where you're getting run off the floor, and that wasn't happening. And again, Auburn does enough to cut it to 4 in the second half, and had a couple of times in the second half where it's like, boy, if Auburn gets that stop, this game is a coin flip again, and this arena's going crazy. So it's not over, but it is. Yeah, it was a struggle last night. The offense was, I think it's safe to say, like if we talked about it going in, like where's Auburn going to really try to what can Auburn count on as an offense? And you would say Keyshawn Hall around the basket.
Well, we started the season thinking this is going to be a really good shooting team, and it hasn't turned out to be. Even though I think there are better shooters than their numbers show, but hey, when it's collectively, the team has not been a great shooting team. As a matter of fact, they're the worst three-point shooting team in the league. They're the worst three-point shooting defense in the league. So it's been get the ball inside. Auburn has to rely on winning inside, points in the paint, and then offensive rebounds. Fandy outscored Auburn in the paint last night.
And teams are going to,
it wasn't last night. I didn't feel like Vandy was really keeping Auburn from getting the opportunities there in the paint. They just weren't making shots.
No, I think especially in the first half.
Yes.
Like the issue wasn't that Vanderbilt was walling up. I think Vanderbilt did a good job.
Well, they did.
But it wasn't as though Vanderbilt overloaded the paint Auburn from getting inside. Auburn would get the looks. Sometimes they were challenging looks, but Auburn would get the looks. But their looks that they've made in other games this year.
Yeah, it's not like Vandy's got Florida's front line or anything. It's like they didn't have that that huge guy that was so imposing that you wouldn't even attempt a shot over or was altering every shot.
But a bad night from Keyshawn Hall to the point where he gets a technical foul midway through the second half and gets benched.
Does not return to the game.
Much it, yeah. Quiet night for Murph, right? Quiet night for
Now Auburn. I mean, it's crazy. If somebody had said if we'd been told yesterday, before we went over there, hey, all five starters are going to score in double figures, and you're going to shoot over 40% from three. I think Auburn's got a great shot of winning. I would think Auburn scores more than 76 points when I hear that.
Yeah, although, I mean, basically nothing
but
from
the problem,
bench, right? Yeah.
The problem was it was Tahad with 20-something and everybody else little around, double figures, 10, 10, 10, 11, 13 or something like that.
And I don't think you got 10 points in bench scoring last night when I'm trying to add. I'm doing the math in my head.
No, you're right. You're right. Elijah had five or six or something like
but
that. Didn't score.
And if you want to view last night, last night would have been a great opportunity to pick up a quad one win. It was a winnable game for, even though Auburn only led for like 20 seconds,
yeah.
It was a game that felt winnable at times. I will say that after a stretch of games where the other team made all the plays in the last 8, 10, mm-hmm. 12 minutes, it was nice to see Auburn as the team surging. Like Auburn did outscore Vanderbilt over the last few minutes of the game, but Vanderbilt had already built up a lead. Auburn had dug itself the hole early, maybe if Auburn had and you can't. Steven mentioned what Vanderbilt hitting those threes must have done to their confidence. Must have done to Vanderbilt's confidence early in the game. You wonder what missing those shots did. You know how jarring it must have been to Auburn early. And they really struggled to get into gear after that. And now you've got a pair of you looked at a three game stretch with Bama at home, Vanderbilt at home, and Arkansas on the road, and said you really need to win at least one of these games.
Yep.
And now
you've got one left, and it's going to be very difficult. Going to be very difficult Saturday night in Fayetteville. For Auburn to avoid losing its fourth straight game. And then you just wonder, the mindset, the psyche of this team, if they've lost four straight and dropped to 5-7 in the conference. They've got some winnable games down the stretch. Look, we knew the middle third was the toughest for Auburn, and they're going to go, 2-4? If they lose to Arkansas, they'll go 2-4 in that middle third.
Yeah, huge challenge on Saturday for a team that just took a couple of home setbacks, which, I think, there's got to be, you don't think about it, but the pressure that a home team feels when there's that kind of crowd and that kind of atmosphere, you don't want to let those folks down.
No,
you don't
want
to see, to see students filing out of the student section with, 2 minutes left in the game, minute and a half left in the game, not judging anyone for doing it. I kind of wish they'd stay till the end at that point. You can stick around. It's not that much longer, but
there weren't that many people left when the final buzzer went off. Yep. And you sort of understand that, but it's tough and something you're not used to over here. All right. We're just underway. Need to get to our first break of the afternoon. We'd love to hear from you. We're hoping to hear from Jason Caldwell. Jason was there. I was over there at the football complex as well, over at the football complex to get defensive assistant coaches. We've got some audio that we can let you hear today. We didn't get a chance to get to Coach Hoodie yesterday, Tyler Hudanik, talking about the offensive line. I know that's something that everybody is really interested in. What's the offensive line going to look like? We've got audio from there. We can talk about what some of the assistant coach has had to say over the last couple of days. But we'll hear from Jason when he gets done. He was sort of transcribing and I'm sure posting a story or two, but we should hear from him as we move on. But we'd love to hear from you as well. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue here with the Wednesday Drive.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew with the afternoon off, so Dan is at the controls. And again, we're expecting to hear from Jason Caldwell at some point. But today, have the five assistant defensive coaches over at the complex at around 3 o'clock. So Jason has been busy trying to transcribe and going to post a story or two before he checks in with us.
And we'll run some audio from the coaches later on. But Bill, I'd love to know sort of, I mean, you were there last night. Like, how do you think this basketball team is going to respond after?
I really don't know.
What troubles you the most? You've talked about, I mean, Stephen's made a point of the defense often.
That's been a concern absolutely throughout, has been the defense. And you know, I know that the 3-point defense, Stephen talking about it the other day, I mean, trying to figure out, is there a pattern? Are there just certain things that are affecting Auburn's defense? It's not just, I mean, you can't just feel like, well, every team just had a better night shooting coincidentally against Auburn when you played 11 conference games.
And I thought Vanderbilt last night, like, if they had cashed in on all of their open looks the outside.
They had some really, especially in the second half. Like, first half, they hit. I think they were 6-for-13 in the first half.
If they had cashed in on their open looks from the outside throughout the game, Auburn would not have been in a position to over the last 10, 12 minutes. And that's been when you look at some of the percentages, right? I mean, Auburn came in with teams shooting 40% from three in conference play this year against Auburn, and Vanderbilt didn't get to, I don't know if they got to 40.
Vandy was 35. Yeah. They were 8-for-23, but like I said, they were 6-for-13 in the first half.
Yeah, they were 35, and as I mentioned earlier, a lot of open looks that Auburn was, you know, you breathe a sigh of relief because Vanderbilt didn't cash in.
Mm-hmm. Just heard from Jason. We'll check in with him. Is that who you got? Oh, okay. I was going to say Jason had just texted and said he'd be good for 15 or 20 minutes. So I was stalling to get to the bottom of the hour.
You want to do the bottom of the hour?
Yeah, let's go ahead and run the bottom of the hour break, and then we'll get Jason for 15 minutes or so. So stick with us. We'll be right back with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here on the Wednesday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio and joined on the Drive Hotline by Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover. JC, how you doing today?
I'm good. How about y'all?
Doing all right. I mean, just sort of a gloomy day. And I said at the start of the show, that's sort of appropriate for Auburn basketball fans after a third straight loss and second straight home loss last night to Vandy.
Yeah, it was. I heard y'all talking about it a bit too before the break, and there's no question. I thought defense was going to be the biggest issue for this team. I thought it was going to be interior defense. But it's been perimeter defense has been a bigger issue. They just haven't done a great job of that. And you're right, Vandy had some open looks last night. I thought there were, I mean, like the end of the half, turning it over, giving up a three, things like that are like, those are things that, I mean, it was like 11-2 run in the first half. That was part of it. Those are things that, like, you just can't do those things and win games. And, you know, we saw it is like Texas A&M. They're, a couple of other games like that where they give up a run and then a couple of turnovers, you look up and they haven't had a huge issue with turnovers. It's just been almost like football 2 years ago, wrong place, wrong time turnovers. And then, you know, like the other thing that just stands out to me is I don't know if you know, because we saw him score a bunch of points Saturday, but like, you know, Keyshawn Hall has shot the ball well from three, but like I think the last three games he's 18 for 51 from two. Mm-hmm. And like that's not like he's a finisher around the rim, and he hasn't finished around the rim lately, and he just hasn't shot the ball very well. And so
Auburn did not have a dunk right. in the first half of
wow. Game. And we were talking about it a little bit before, you know, while we were over at the complex a little earlier, Jason. I mean, it's sort of like Keyshawn is working so hard to try to draw fouls that he's not concentrating on finishing with a basket.
Yeah, no, I think it reminds me a little bit of Broom kind of got into that too.
Uh huh.
There were so many things where there should have been and one. Yep. Yeah, that became just free throws. And Keyshawn Hall's strong, and there should be a lot of and ones. And there was four or five games ago, there were a bunch of and ones, and now it's just two free throws. And so, yeah, I don't know. You look and go, look, there's still a lot of things left on the table for this team. When you look at the schedule, obviously, to me, I think it, like, you front end and back end now the rest of the way. At Arkansas, at Alabama, the two toughest games you got left, in my opinion. The middle games are all games I think you could and maybe should win. If you do that, you'll be fine. Can you take advantage of the games you're supposed to win from here on out? That's what this team's going to have to do.
Yeah, no question. I mean, this team, I mean, they're still high in, you know, the computer rankings. I mean, everything. Auburn is still showing, and I think everyone still has Auburn as a better than a 90% chance of making the tournament, but they need to win the games they're supposed to win and see if they can't, you know, knock off one of the other ones. I don't know that where's Kentucky now in the RPI, because that's another one. I mean they've got
they're back,
four.
They're back in the top 25.
Yeah.
You'll have some more opportunities. Yes, those games. What you can't do is you can't afford a loss at Mississippi State.
No.
Can't afford a loss to Ole Miss. Those are the games. Look, you get to 9-9 with the non-conference schedule that you played and with wins over in Arkansas, with wins at Florida, with wins over St. John's, with a win over NC State, and you'll be in good shape. That's the thing now. You got to get to that number. You got to get to 9 SEC wins. And then if you get more than that, that's great. But I think right now, just trying to find a way to get into the tournament, see if you make a run. Mm-hmm.
As the setbacks pile up, though, right? I mean, as the further you get, I mean, Auburn's last win was Texas, right? It's like the last, you know, the further you get from that, the more even some of those games, right? At Mississippi State, at Oklahoma, home against Ole Miss. It's like these feel like games where, I mean, Auburn still has to find some of what's been missing. These last couple, yeah, I mean, yes, the quality of competition takes a step back, but I remember earlier in the year when we were talking about, well, I mean, Auburn was getting ready to play Georgia, and the thought was, well, the quality of competition was a big reason why Auburn's win-loss record was what it was. And it's like you still, I mean, every team in the league is showing up ready to compete, and that Oklahoma team that Auburn's going to go see, you know, on the road. Like, they just beat Vanderbilt.
In Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, you look at and it, what's interesting, you know, like, you know, the Alabama game for me is like, defensively, you look at it, go, man, they came up a ton of points, and you can't play that way. Alabama's like the number two offensive efficiency team in the country. So you probably win 95% of the games you play that day the way you played, in my opinion. But you didn't play that way last night.
No.
That's the thing. Now, Vandy's a good team. They're not as talented, in my opinion, as Alabama is.
Nope.
But if you played the way you played against Alabama, you'd have won last night. That's what you have to do. You have to go, look, can you get – and that's been the thing. It's been consistency. And that's what I thought that was going to be the issue for this team. That's why I compared it to the 2019 team. That team made the Final Four. They had a bunch of these types of things, except when they did it, they lost 101-73 or something like that. I mean, they got blown out in games. This team has avoided those since the early season in SEC play. They just can't win the closer games, the games they should win and or could win. But I do think there's some things that are still out there for this team, but it's consistency. Can you consistently defend, and can you get consistency? And listen, you know that Todd Pettiford and Keyshawn Hall are going to be two of your most important guys. In my opinion, those guys don't need to shoot 31 times in a game. I think that's too much. You got some other options on this team that can score, and especially around the basket. I just don't think that there needs to be a game where you look up and those guys, especially not if they're 10 for 31. You're not going to win games when that happens.
Hall in particular was forcing it. I think that's one of the issues that led to him getting benched for the final 12 plus minutes of the game. And yeah, I thought it was really interesting to see Auburn compete and even cut into the lead without Keyshawn Hall over the final few minutes of the game. It's very easy to do the armchair quarterback. Well, they're better off without Keyshawn Hall. See, like, there's proof of it right there. And I don't think that's the correct conclusion to take. But
it's not. It's also not the correct one for people to go, hey, why wasn't your best player on the court at that time? Because you were playing better without him. Mm-hmm. Each game is an individual entity. And last night, that was the case. But you're right. I mean, like, he needs to play. But last night, they were better without him being on the court. And those two things can both be true.
Talking with Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover here on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. Jason, we were over at the football complex a little while ago getting a chance to talk with the defensive assistants. A highlight or two just from what you heard from the guys.
Yeah. I think one of them is, man, there's a lot of connections throughout this staff.
More than I realized. You're right.
I know. You think about, like, the connections, and you think about, well, Golish and Cody Burns, and that's the first one you jump to. But, I mean, you know, Coleman Hutzler has worked with Dirk, and Tim Banks was Vontrell King-Williams' defensive coordinator at one time. I'm like, there's a lot of connections. But mm-hmm. I wrote today that even more than that, Tim Banks was at Tennessee for 6 years. He recruited Caleb Harris, Sylvester Smith, Anquan Fagans,
Eric Winters,
and Fred Gaskin. So you go like, man, there's five guys in the room that he knew from the recruiting trail. So, like, hey, you jump in and you know these faces. They know you. Now you get to coach them for the first time. So I think that's it. It's something like it used to be when you started over with the new staff, you started over. And now it's not that much anymore when you transfer from USF coming in. There's more continuity than maybe folks realize on this staff and team, and I think that's one of the things that stands out.
Yeah, and that's got to be a big plus as they, you know, you have so many new faces as everyone across the country does, but that's going to be a big plus as they go through winter workouts and get ready for spring.
Yeah, Jason, we were there with Cody, right, talking to him on Tuesday, and he talked about familiarity specifically when you're dealing with Byron Brown and receivers that know Byron Brown's tendencies, and for Byron Brown to be able to trust his receivers to go to the spots where he needs them, like that's huge for guys that are moving into a new setting.
Yeah, no, because we talked about, like, just in general, you know, bringing guys from USF and we heard coaches talk about that, and you think about quarterback wide receiver connections. The familiarity when you bring in four wide receivers from USF, he knows those guys. That's a big deal. I think about Cole Best, the center, and man, Coach Huddy, Tyler Hudnick yesterday talking about Cole Best and like what he is in the locker room and the weight room and all those things. And
mm-hmm.
this is the coaching staff that's bringing in players that they know exactly what they're going to get out of them, and those players know exactly what to expect. And I just think that's such a big deal. And so, you think about it, you know, when you make coaching changes, you come in and go, man, you got to set the foundation but they're bringing the foundation with them. Like, this is reminds me of like seeing a house move down the highway, you know, where you're like, no, we're not building the house, we're bringing the house with us. And that's kind of what it feels like with this, is like they're bringing the house with them, that foundation. They're not having to pour a slab, it's already there, and they're just relocating it. And I think a quarterback, wide receiver, offensive line, and just overall, I think that's an important part of things. And heck, I mean, you hate to harp on it because it's impossible to recreate it. But that's what just happened in Indiana.
Yep. Yes,
and,
indeed.
And I'm not saying Auburn's going to go win a national championship, but listen, you might start off on a better foot than you think just because of doing some of those things.
Oh yeah, there's no question. What a huge step in the right direction that is to have all those connections and relationships already in place. Yeah. Yeah. DeMarcus Van Dyke was even talking about it. You know, Scrap Richardson. Is a guy who was committed to him at South Florida before he decided to go to Notre Dame, and now he's back with him. So it's like relationships. Yeah, it's a huge factor.
It is. It's a big deal. I mean, Cody Burns, you know, obviously a couple of these guys he recruited, Deshaun Spencer's guy they really wanted, you know, when they were at South Florida and they didn't think they were going to be able to get him. The same with, you know, Brady Marchese, you know, when he was from, you know, up in Cartersville, Georgia, those two guys they recruited, like, listen, probably not going to be able to get those guys. Well, when you get to Auburn, you can get them. And mm-hmm. They were able to get these guys, already had a relationship, already knew them. And so, yeah, there's a lot of those ties and connections that permeate through this, even though it's a new staff and, quote, new team. It's not that new.
Jason, we're just over 48 hours away from the first pitch. Of the 2026 Auburn baseball season with Jake Marciano. We'll throw it. We'll deliver that first pitch. Just your thoughts.
I'm sure there are people in the Auburn Opelika area who are more excited for the return of baseball season than our buddy Jason Coble. But you're in the top 1%. I'm sure of folks. You know, especially with the with the talented
expectations.
Yeah, with the caliber of this roster. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I think just seeing how the pieces fit together. Because
mm-hmm.
In most of my 27 years of covering Auburn baseball, it's always been, man, do you have enough pieces to finish it out? Do you have enough outfielders? Man, I hope somebody doesn't get hurt because you're going to be thin. I don't think that's the case with this roster. Now the case is, how do you fit the pieces together? Because I really think there's 13, 14 position players that they feel like they could win with. It's a matter of where those guys wind up. I mean, Eric Guevara is going to be a guy that could play short, could play third.
Mm-hmm.
Bub Terrell could play in the outfield, could play first base. Ethan Bingaman could play first base or in the outfield. Todd Clay could play first
either
or third.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's going to be some of those things. Lucas Steele could catch, could play a little first, could play left field maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of those options. How do you fit the pieces together? And then on the mound is can you find a couple of guys that can be consistent on the front end? And then, you know, Ryan Hetzler, Garrett Brewer on the back end, you know, a lot of pieces in between. And so, you know, development, you know, guys like Dre Alvarez, Christian Chatterton, and then Jackson Sanders gets a start.
Mm-hmm.
He was probably the third guy of that group last year. He's been one of the more consistent guys in preseason. So there's talent. Now how do you fit those things together? That'll be the thing to watch.
Yeah, that's something that people at times forget. I mean, the step that some players can make between freshman and sophomore year, especially pitchers. So, I mean, there can be quite a few changes and some great opportunities. Can't wait for it. Of course, Jason will – Jason, you got color on Saturday, right?
Yep, I did. Got a little radio on Saturday, and then we'll see what the weather looks like on Sunday, maybe hanging around for a little while. But, yes, I'm looking forward to this weekend and getting it rolling.
Hey, Jason, again, appreciate you spending a little bit of time with us. With so much going on, I mean, we've talked basketball, football, and baseball. I mean, there's news in all, and that's why you guys had multiple people over there talking with all the coaches and following everything. I mean, let everybody know how they can get caught up on everything that's going on.
Yeah, this is that time of year when you got everything rolled into one, and, you know, we got about a month or so until we kick football practices into that mix as well, but Yeah, check it all out, auburnundercover.com. And, yeah, we had kind of everybody on board today. We got videos up from every coach we talked to the last 2 days. So you can watch videos at our YouTube page, Auburn Undercover. But stories as well. Christian with the recruiting angle of it. Me and Nathan kind of doing the football side. And Patrick Bingaman doing a great job with our videos. So you can check all that out at our social media platforms and find us at auburnundercover.com.
Awesome stuff as always, Jason. Have fun this weekend. Hopefully the weather holds up, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
That is Jason Caldwell, who we really appreciate jumping on with us. We will take our final break of the first hour. We'll come back with Morgan. Open the phone lines up. Plus, we got some audio from talking to coaches earlier this week. We'll run some of that as well. But stick around. You are listening to the Wednesday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into the Drive here. Final segment of hour number one on this Wednesday with Bill and Dan. Let's see, you're out tomorrow.
That's right. Trojans hosting Louisiana tomorrow at Trojan Arena. I'll be back.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say, and you're watching.
Oh, yeah, no, we got some.
Is that going on live?
That's live, yeah.
Okay, Dan's watching very intently another ball game because it could affect where the Trojans are on the standings,
so,
right?
So Troy's with six games left in the regular season, Troy is a game back in the loss column of first place in the Sun
Belt.
What
are they, 10-2 now?
Yeah, Troy's 10-2. You've got Arkansas State, who only has one conference loss. Arkansas State lost at Troy. Mm-hmm. Georgia Southern also has two conference losses. Marshall has three.
Wow.
Troy still has to go to Arkansas State. That's the last week of the regular season, so there's a rematch between those two teams. Arkansas State's got four road games in a row starting today at Georgia Southern. They go to Marshall on Saturday. So Arkansas State's got a tough schedule for them. They've got a tough road. Marshall and Georgia Southern play twice between now and the end of the season as well. So you've got, like, I mean, you've got some of the teams at the top mm-hmm. of the standings on a collision course with one another. Troy's got four home games in a row starting tomorrow before they go to Jonesboro and play Arkansas State. Mm-hmm. You take care of business in those four home games, including senior night next week, and then you hope that you're – you know, in position to maybe win a conference championship that last week of the season. But it seems like, you know, you're down to four, maybe five teams that have a chance at the league title in the Sun Belt. Troy's one of them. And yeah, you got a couple of those teams. Several games between now and the end of the season between those teams that are still in the hunt for the league title, including the one going on right now between Ark State and Georgia Southern. And Georgia Southern is up big at the half, 15 at the break over Arkansas State.
And the Trojans would have tiebreakers over both of them right now.
Well, Georgia Southern beat Troy, but so when you're talking about the regular season championship,
uh-huh.
there's no tiebreakers. It's everyone who has the best record gets to claim a share.
Okay, so co-champs.
Yeah, you claim for.
What
for
about
the,
seeding for the tourney?
They'll break the tiebreakers out for seeding in the tournament. There's a pretty big difference with the way the Sun Belt bracket's set up. Big difference between 2 and 3. Big difference between 4 and 5. It basically means you play an extra game in the round every, you know. If
that makes sense, because top two seeds, then okay.
You got semifinals, and they basically, you know, they break it by two from there. So you'd want to be in the top two. Mm-hmm. You could very well have a situation where there's 3 2-loss teams in the Sun Belt at the end of the regular season. And
one of them's got to finish third.
Got
to be the third seed.
But they'll have a regular season championship.
They get to hang a banner, but they'll be the third seed.
Hang a banner and make some rings, but it's some exciting games down the stretch in the Sun Belt. I'll be calling one tomorrow against Troy and Louisiana. Also, if Shanda wins that game, if Coach Rigby, uh-huh. If Troy wins, it'll be Coach Rigby will be breaking the record for most wins at Troy by a women's basketball coach.
Okay.
She's currently tied with Joyce Sorrell, who started the program up, and she could surpass Coach Sorrell with a win.
So it could be a big one tomorrow. Oh, well, that's cool. So Dan will be out tomorrow. Coach Don Dunn will be in. We are out of time here at hour number one. We talked with Jason Caldwell. He mentioned Coach Hoodie, Todd Hudanik. We've got some audio from him. If we get a chance, we'll run it. We'll run it at some point this week because your calls come first, and we'll check the lines when we come back. I'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390, as we're halfway done here on the Wednesday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Did you get a little get any sprinkles today? There was a little rain on me as we went around. I didn't think it was supposed to be raining today.
Saw a little bit on the remnants.
It's just been gray
remnants
today,
on the vehicle.
You know?
Yeah, foggy and overcast.
Just sort of gloomy.
Yeah.
And again,
You know what though? After not seeing the sun for 2 weeks,
and after temperatures being, you know, with single digit wind chills, I can handle this.
This is more like it.
Oh
and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
hopefully,
you're right.
You know, with baseball starting up this weekend, hopefully everybody, gets
temperatures expected to be around 70. I mean, for the next week or so. I mean, there is a chance of rain. I think more on Sunday than Saturday. That's what Jason was talking about. But I'm looking forward to it. And we're looking forward to getting to the phone because Bill has been hanging on the Drive hotline for quite a while. Let's get to the phones. Hey, Bill.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. I was going to just run this by. I heard the coach talking about, you know, his best players need to play better defense, and that kind of gets it out there in front of them. I'm just asking your opinion. Do they not possess the ability to play defense, or they just don't want to? What do you think is going on?
You know, Steven specifically said that he thought last night it was effort, but too many mistakes. Right? It wasn't so much like there have been
wasn't
games,
a lack of effort. Last
yeah, there
night.
There have no. been there have been games in the past where he was upset about the effort shown on defense, and he thought last night it wasn't so much guys weren't showing the effort. It's that guys were either making mistakes or getting beaten by the other team, which is, you know, it's still asking the team to play better, but I don't think it was necessarily a case of disinterest, although the fact that Keyshawn Hall sat for the final 13 minutes of the game, you know, does indicate that, like, I mean, at some point Steven had seen enough from him and decided to go with some other combinations.
Yeah, what you have sometimes, Bill. I mean, it's hard. It is hard. Just for anyone, but human nature sometimes is if you're really struggling at one part of your game to not let that carry over to the other part. And Keyshawn was frustrated. There's no question about that. Offensively, I think, as Dan said, I think in the past there have been some times when you wondered, are they giving the effort that they need to? Because you have to defensively. You've got to want to play defense and play that hard defensively. And I think that's one of the things that Steven had been talking about. But last night, I think it was probably more of a frustration and thinking and not reacting on the defensive end because of the frustrations that were going on the offensive end. But I don't think there's anybody that we have seen playing that isn't capable of playing good defense.
And Bill, I was making the case that fatigue was a factor sort of before the game, you know, in some of the previous underwhelming second halves that you've seen from the team this season. I don't think fatigue was a culprit last night. You know, I thought Auburn's best basketball came in the final 10, 12 minutes of the game, and it wasn't enough because they dug themselves such an early hole. It was sluggish at times. It lacked crispness, but it wasn't. I don't think it was a matter of like, oh, they gotta rethink things because the guys are worn down. I don't think that's what happened last night. I think they got outplayed for a big chunk of the first half, and when they kicked it into gear, they were down 15.
Yeah.
Okay, so I appreciate the input, guys. Thanks.
Appreciate the call, Bill. 334-321-1390.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know,
yeah, it is.
I mean, I don't know.
But do you think that Auburn doesn't have the talent or ability to play defense? I don't.
I mean, I think it's some. It's clearly a change from what Keyshawn Hall has been asked to do throughout his career.
And a lot of these guys. Yeah. Think about it. I mean, you bring in 10 new players like Auburn did. A lot of them had been the man and had primarily been the man offensively.
I mean, I think Overton playing at Texas Tech last year probably knew what to expect.
No, because, I agree
because
there.
It's a similar pressing style. I think for a lot of the other guys, it is a pretty drastic shift from whatever kind of basketball right. You were playing last year to suddenly start playing. You know, they signed up to play Bruce Pearl basketball. They're playing Stephen Pearl basketball. I think that's going to be something, and that's going to be something Stephen navigates. You know, as long as he's a head coach, as far as going into the portal and finding guys who fit, it's not a matter of finding guys who fit.
It's not just statistically.
From a scoring,
here's somebody that averaged 20 points, plug them in, we're going to add 20 to what we're doing now, and we're not going to give up anymore.
I think there's a balance that you're looking for. There's an ecosystem, and I think finding the guys who buy into what you demand defensively is a battle. For coaches that want to say they prioritize defense, finding guys who fit that in the portal every mm-hmm. year, who can still give you what you need offensively, is a gigantic challenge.
And Bruce did an amazing job of finding pieces, but he never, you know, and he's the guy that brought these guys in, but he never had to bring as many pieces in at one time as he did this year. That's the challenge, and you would. You know, we were talking about it yesterday.
And even
trying to project who's going to be back next year, you don't know. Hopefully Auburn doesn't have to bring in 10 new guys again next year.
And even Bruce had, after the year after Jabari and Walker left, there was a year where he went into the portal to find new pieces, and it was an up and down uneven. I mean, Janai, in his first year at Auburn, went 10-8 in the SEC.
Right.
I mean, it was that first season – it was light on really good teams that they beat that season. Like it was that's the team that loses to Houston in the round of 32.
Right.
Like that team
up in Birmingham.
Yeah. That felt like the beginning of something, and it ended up culminating in a Final Four a couple years later. I wonder how much of this is the beginning of something that maybe stretches beyond this year. We'll see. But I mean, if Sebastian and Phillip and
you know, the thing is, it's hard right now. Sebastian is probably the guy that right now you go, I'd love to see him here in a year or two. In 2 years, you know, how good is he going to be as an overall player, a kind of guy that you can sort of build a team around?
And I wouldn't give up on Phillip.
We've seen more from Seb, as Andy was calling him last night, that, you know, early on, he's just had more of an opportunity. Look, Phillip, I really like what we've seen, and he has grown and gotten so much better. We haven't seen as much of some of the other young. Elijah Freeman is another guy that I think has a tremendously high ceiling.
And he's played a lot of college basketball, so you may forget, you know, Overton's a junior.
Right. He has another year of eligibility.
Overton has another year of eligibility. Tahad has two, depending on what he wants to do. But there's the chance that you've got, like, if you believe, as I do, that one of the secret weapons of the team last year was how much basketball they'd played together.
I absolutely believe that. Like I don't think that was much of a secret. I think you look, an experience playing together is tremendous in every sport.
Now, they were still really talented players. I mean, Chad's gone on to be one of the best scorers in the Big Ten, and Dylan's in the NBA, and Janai is a guy who would be in the NBA under different circumstances, I think, depending on which team he was on. You know, he might be getting a run in the NBA, and guys like Denver and Miles are great basketball players. Like, it's
outstanding,
not, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so it's not like it was just familiarity. Like, you need skill. You're right there.
Not just guys that know each other.
Yeah, the pieces still need to fit. But I think that you have some guys that certainly feel like they could be important parts of this roster for years to come on the basketball team. But that's not gonna keep you warm during a four-game losing streak.
No.
You know what I mean? Knowing that there are some pieces that could be really important for multiple seasons.
And it is not. I heard some people go, Man, we're back in the dark ages. It's just like the Barbie. No, no. You are. Yes, you've lost double digit games, and you're a game under 500 in conference play, but you have played the toughest schedule in the nation. I mean, those teams playing this schedule wouldn't they would have given anything in the world to be able to see 500 in the distance.
Yeah.
I mean,
15 years ago.
After 24 games, this team might be 8-16, but I doubt it.
I mean, if you're talking about like 15 years ago, if you led for 20 seconds at home in a quad one game, you threw a parade. Like you weren't disappointed that you got to within four in the fourth quarter and lost.
No, right. You're
like
right.
You were getting wiped out in games like this. You weren't they weren't competitive. And so for Auburn, like these two losses hurt because you felt like you could have done enough to win them.
Absolutely.
And you didn't. Are they going to be and you know what? And if things spiral from here, this is going to be seen as the week where things broke,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that's on Auburn to keep that from happening. Could it happen? I mean, this league's competitive enough.
Oh yeah,
you don't have an easy guaranteed win on the schedule the rest of the way. So I mean, I suppose it probably could happen, but you know, I like to think that Auburn's going to be able to do enough to stay on the right side of the bubble. For now.
Going to be tough, though, Saturday night. No question about that. Arkansas is laying in wait. They really, really want this one badly. I was talking with an Arkansas fan earlier today, and yes, they've been sort of waiting for the opportunity to get back at Auburn after the way Auburn handled them over at Neville Arena earlier. Let's get to a call before we get to our first break. 334-321-1390. Dan's on the board, so we don't know who we're talking to. Hey, go ahead. You're on the drive.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, guys. It's John in Auburn.
Hey, John.
You know, I don't even think you have to go back to the Barbie days, wasn't it? And I can't recall the name. I think it was year two of the Bruce Pearl era that Auburn makes a surprise run to, like, the semifinals of the SEC tournament. And we have a walk-on center playing against, like, Anthony Davis that I'd never heard of, like, when we're in Atlanta or wherever the tournament was that year. And there have been a lot darker days than the last week or so of Auburn basketball.
Well, there's some fans that, you know, have grown to expect, you know, being right there and if not winning the regular season, contending for it or winning a conference tournament title and expecting to be a top four seed, just thinking that's almost a right that you have. And it's like, no, when you have to overturn a complete roster and you have, you know, a coaching change, you lose somebody like Bruce, it's not going to be as easy as you know, as some people might think.
But yeah, all that to say, I think this team on a neutral floor you know, maybe be a double-digit favorite over the first two or three teams that Bruce had at Auburn.
Oh, I agree there. I agree.
Oh, no, I mean Auburn didn't start to flirt with the bubble until that 2018 team that won the league. Right? Like, Auburn wasn't really a team that was in consideration for the NCAA tournament.
It was still celebration time to make the tournament.
Yeah. I mean, it took until 2018 for Auburn to make the NCAA tournament under Bruce Pearl. And so, no, I mean, I still think there's a – like, that's the cost of elevating the standard over the last couple of years is now it is time to panic when the team loses multiple conference games in a row or multiple home league games in a row. And, you know, you can still say, look, Auburn's lost three straight games against teams that are going to be in the NCAA tournament. Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Alabama are tournament teams. It's not an implosion yet. Arkansas is a tournament team.
Yes, they are.
You've got South
Carolina. Lose to Mississippi State? That's a different story.
You've got Ole Miss and State and South Carolina and LSU.
Ole Miss may. I mean, they're on the perimeter. But, I mean, with Ole Miss, I mean, with Mississippi State, LSU, and Oklahoma, those are teams you can't lose to those teams.
And one final thought, if I may, just real quick. I'll be interested looking into next year to see what Stephen does in evaluating rotation and in roster construction, mm-hmm. because I feel like he will be a little more analytical in his approach than Bruce was to roster construction. I think this will be the most fascinating offseason of Auburn basketball in maybe 10 or 15 years. Thank you, guys.
Good point, John. I don't know that I disagree with that.
Yeah, and I know that, I mean, you have freshmen that, you know, folks are wondering, like, well, maybe next year, you know, we'll see for the guys that you're not seeing too much of. Saw a little Simon Walker last night.
Yep.
Didn't make a huge difference, but I do think that they wanted to be able to expand the rotation in the first half, and he made an appearance.
And we did see, I mean, and we saw more of Elijah, and you saw him some at the two last night, too, I wondered about that.
And you did see a better second half from Tahad.
You did.
Like, the thought that you got to play a little bit of Simon Walker in the first half to sit Tahad down, mm-hmm. and you got a better Tahad Pettiford in the second half, I think, is a positive development. Won't be surprised if you see some Simon Walker in the first half against Arkansas.
If only
just to get Tahad and Overton and or Overton some minutes on the bench, mm-hmm. where you can have a fresher guy in the second half.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Back with more of your phone calls, 334-321-1390, here on the Wednesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here, and let's get back to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Slack is up next. Hey, Slack.
Hey, buddy.
What's going on, guys?
Good to hear from you.
Defense, when you're playing defense in basketball, it's not one guy. It's all five guys. Mm-hmm. So it's a cop-out when you take your best score out of the game and put him on the bench. That's just my opinion. Auburn's biggest problem has always been switching on defense. In the past, when we had the previous team this past year, we had big guys that whenever you make a pick, they would step out and help out, and Dylan would defend the guy, either block the shot.
Right.
We got guys now that's not coming up, and that's the problem. It's not that one guy. It's all five guys. We're getting caught up behind screens because we don't know how to play defense. It's all five guys not knowing how to play. It's not one guy.
How much of a problem do you think it is, though, Slack, when these guys may not have been schooled that much defensively and are all coming in and playing together for the first time?
Well, all these guys have been playing ever since they were 9.
Well, I know, but all of them haven't had to worry about defense all the time.
I think Slack's on to something. Can I ask you something? Oh, go ahead, Slack.
In most cases, your best shooters, Larry Bird never played defense. Magic Johnson never played defense. Michael Jordan played defense. You know, most times all your scorers don't ever play defense. Because you notice years ago when, just using NBA guys for an example, most of the time the guy that's guarding the best player on offense is normally not your scorer at all.
No,
he's
you're
just
absolutely
the guy
right.
That's out there that's playing defense.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening now is teams have figured out that we're not playing with seven guys. So they're putting an extra guy on the court that normally they don't put on the court, but now they're putting a score on the court to where Keyshawn's got to play defense because this guy can score. I figured that out, but it looked like the coaches hadn't figured that out
so,
yet.
So Slack, can I ask you, what do you think it is specifically about Keyshawn Hall's defense that made him sort of the scapegoat last night or was – egregious enough
because
to put him on the bench last night.
He wasn't scoring the points that he normally does. Yeah. That's all what it was.
It wasn't that his defense was especially bad last night. It was that you can live with Keyshawn Hall's defense most nights when he's producing on offense.
Right. If Keyshawn had played the last 10 minutes of the ball game and had scored 15 more points, we'd have won the ball game, which he could have done. And I'm not saying he could have or should have done, but you don't know because he's sitting on the bench. You know, our problem last night wasn't defense. Our problem last night, we wasn't scoring points.
Yeah, you're right there.
I mean, you had 40.
Especially in the first half. It was terrible.
40-something points in the first half.
Scoring points.
Yeah. 31 points in the first half, 32% shooting.
He started out slow, but you take him out of the ball game because he's using an excuse of he wasn't playing defense.
Well, he didn't really say that. He just said the group that we had in there was more effective. is pretty well, yeah, what,
I mean,
what he
you
was
said
saying.
That but. The last ball game, our best players got to play better defense.
Right.
It came
all
right.
All five guys got to play defense.
It came right after the tee as well, right? It came right after Keyshawn was teed up. So I do wonder, like Paul Harvey, I wonder
the rest of the story.
Yeah, I wonder if there's more to the story of Keyshawn Hall going to the bench right around the time that he gets the technical foul in that situation. But no, that's an interesting point. I mean, Steven mentioned that he was really pleased with how Elijah Freeman stepped up defensively and as a rebounder in those minutes without Keyshawn Hall on the floor. But Auburn could have scored a few more points during
that
stretch.
Yeah, they had a couple of opportunities they didn't cash in on.
You know, one of the big things that kind of bothers me, too, is Elijah's, to me, probably the most athletic player on that basketball team.
I think so.
But we don't run an offensive set for him at all.
I wonder, Slack, what – go ahead, Slack.
The whole ball game.
My question, Slack, is he a player who needs to hit his jump shots before teams feel like they can defend him if the plan is to send him to the basket? I wonder if that's, you know.
Yeah, but you know, I think Slack's got something there, though. If they could find a way where they're not multiple people trying. I don't know that there are many guys individually that can guard Elijah Freeman when he's trying to go to the bucket.
Right. I mean, even a lot. Whatever happened to the lob pass we used to throw this guy?
Yep.
Who could jump with this guy? Not too many people.
You're right.
I had somebody asking me last night, like, why is he so far from the basket?
That's not his game.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot.
Yet, I mean, maybe it will be at some point. But
you know what I'm talking about, right, Slack? Like sometimes in the half court,
he's 25 feet away,
and it's like I see some, and it's not just because they both played D2 ball. It's like I see some Chaney Johnson in his game, and that's not necessarily, you know, that's maybe with a foot touching the paint rather than a foot, you know, both feet behind the 3-point line.
Yeah. All right, guys, appreciate it.
Good stuff, Slack. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390.
When Elijah Freeman's got a foot touching the paint, he's a jump away from the basket.
He is. I mean, he's done some ridiculous things in there when he's anywhere. Excuse me, when he's anywhere near the basket, because he seems like he can jump up and he almost is like Mr. Stretch and can just reach out and get to the rim. He's got tremendous. I said it a while ago. He's got tremendous. Potential on a ceiling.
Sort of want to see, and I mean, we'll talk to Steven Friday before the trip to Arkansas. But it's like I'd love to know sort of how Keyshawn Hall responded to the time on the bench, you know, in the final minutes of the Vanderbilt game, and sort of where they go from here, because I have to imagine it's I mean, tell you what, a disappointing game from Keyshawn Hall on Saturday would be concerning, just because Auburn needs him to beat Arkansas, but also because if he were to come out flat after finishing the last game on the bench, you wonder, do we have a problem here? And it's late in the season to have problems like that.
No, you don't want to have a problem heading into mid-February as you try to head toward March. Hopefully getting things, you know, really clicking is what you want down the stretch. Auburn's got the opportunity to, like I said earlier, you knew this was going to be a tough stretch. You were hoping you came through it at least 3-3. If they beat Arkansas, they made it through 3-3. But it's going to be really tough.
You know, I appreciate, and we can run some football if you want. I appreciate the football press folks, Taylor and the rest of the gang, for like giving us availability with Coach Golish last week and with the offensive and defensive coaches this week. I am finding it very hard to shift into football mode. Maybe it's because the Super Bowl just happened.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe it's because we are still
talking. We're coming down the stretch in college basketball.
And I am grateful to, and Bruce Pearl is the person who gets most of the credit here, although Steven and this team deserve credit for this year. I am grateful that we are not one of the SEC fan bases, SEC markets, where all the talk right now is about next football season
or baseball. I love baseball,
but even baseball, like I mean, it's just
getting started. It's not the time to be just focusing on baseball as we're just past the midpoint in basketball.
Yeah, I just get the feeling that like LSU, like they're craving morsels of information about next year's football team.
And Mississippi State, that's what they're dining out on. It's all baseball, you know, right. Places, some places.
Yeah, Oklahoma.
Like, yeah.
You think they're talking basketball today at Oklahoma?
No,
at
I sort of
like,
doubt it.
At Oklahoma. Like, and it's like, and we used to go through this, right?
Oh, yes.
We, like February used to be
recruiting and spring football. Yeah, no
like,
kidding.
Like we know what it feels like, and it's like you're still talking about a team that's in the tournament in most projections.
Yes, in just about everybody's
projection. A team that's got some quality wins, a team that has an opportunity down the stretch to solidify their NCAA tournament position, and or play their way out.
Hey, like Jason
of the NCAA tournament, but it's so much more interesting to me than trying to break down like every little tidbit of football recruiting for a season that's. That feels like it's a long, long way.
Yeah, now I do think though people want to hear from some of the coaches never heard, and especially guys like talking about the offensive line where it has been a problem, and you've got a new assistant coach.
Tremendously, and so that's the thing is like it's interesting stuff coming out of the football program. It's just tough for it's
not your top story tonight,
and it doesn't. Well, and
it's like. You know, if we opened up the show going, hey, here it is.
And how close are we to spring football? Too? I mean, we're not that far away from like football practice getting going. You know, it's a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's not I mean we'll be talking about what we've seen from these guys, hopefully. When that gets started.
I've got a feeling we'll get to see some.
I think so too. I think they like the
You know, they don't mind.
Yeah,
I think the eyes.
They appreciate the coverage. You know, I think so. Mm-hmm. So I hope that continues. But
all right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. We'd love to hear from you again. Your calls come first 334-321-1390. As we come get ready to come back for the final half hour of the Wednesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Wednesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. We had a special guest.
Hey!
A surprise visitor.
Yeah, so
he hasn't said he would definitely be on, although he's got the headphones and the mic up.
No, this is how we get most of our guests, actually. We
That's
see
right.
them in the
Just
lobby and say, grab hey, yell,
don't
yell
let
at them
leave the building.
During commercial breaks. Adam Cole is here from... now I don't want to get it wrong. So you're Montgomery Advertiser, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean you're there with the and you can catch Adam covering football, covering men's basketball, and doing a tremendous job covering the Auburn baseball team.
Well, you're a big baseball guy though.
Yeah. No. Like huge. I my first after I graduated college spring 21, but my first opportunity after that was covering the Cape Cod Baseball League, and that just changed everything.
Oh yeah.
You know, that was I lived in a motel room for 3 months and didn't have more than a toaster, and if somebody told me to do it again, I would probably do it in a heartbeat.
Grapefruit leaguer.
Oh, man.
One of our guys, man. So
and that is great. That's a great person to have on with us as we head to one of our baseball guys. There's no question, probably the baseball guy here on the show as far as our callers. That's our good buddy Tex. Tex, how you doing?
Hey, by the way, I'm 66 and been running a business for 31 years. I'd quit today to go cover Cape Cod for 3 months or the Alaskan League every day. I'm so excited about baseball. I'm leaving tomorrow, so I'll be in town by tomorrow night.
Adam had his headset on, but it wasn't plugged in.
I only heard the first part.
He started off by saying, "Yeah, he's 66." And if he could, he'd give up what he's doing to go to cover the Cape Cod
okay.
for 3 months
yeah.
as well.
I thought I heard Alaska League in there, too.
He did. He said, or the Alaska.
Yeah, no.
That's where his son pitched in Alaska.
Okay.
So. It's so drastic. Texas, so different from last year, like going into the season coming off of, you know, a pretty disappointing 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, a lot of unknowns. They were betting big on some freshmen.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, a lot, you know, they rolled seven on enough of these guys that now you're talking about, one of the top teams in the SEC going into this year.
Right. Like I was thinking about that on the way over here. This will be my fifth season covering them, and this is the first time I can remember that it's been like consensus top 10 projections, and just I mean this is really like this is one of the rosters in the country that I think is genuinely one of the 10 best out there, and I'll be really interested to kind of like you said, I mean see how many they hit on and just how well it all pans out.
Well, it's really interesting that the focus has been on pitching, which, by the way, for those that don't know Butch's history, he's a pitching guy and has been for a long time. But we're pretty stacked despite some of the guys that went away from our lineup. Mm-hmm. We've got some guys that can swing the stick pretty well. So it's interesting that that's kind of been pushed to the side to talk about our pitchers. And the number one thing, they're even talking about it here in Baton Rouge, that – velocity is throughout the league.
Mm-hmm.
It's about command and where you place the ball. And I love listening to Butch talk about, well, he threw 74% strikes. And that's the focus now, and throwing it with multiple pitches.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought about a story about going with your best pitch in the big time. Bill, you remember Lance Long.
Oh, yeah.
We're playing Clemson. He kept shaking me off, and Coach Nix called me some bad names, and we went out to have a discussion about it. And so he told him, don't shake me off again. And we wanted fastball in on Jimmy Key's hands. Yes, that Jimmy Key.
Yeah, who was known a little bit more as a pitcher, but yes, go ahead.
Oh, he could swing it too.
During spring break? Was that the series here during spring break?
Yes, that was spring break.
Yeah, I remember that.
I gave him the signal for the fastball in. And it's designed for me to be on the outside and slide in. And I go to slide in, and I just go, son of a blank, 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 blank. He's throwing breaking ball. You could see it the whole time. And it went over the old 402 sign in dead center. And before Key got to second base, Coach Nix was at the chalk. He was going out. And for those of you that know Lance, he was a legacy because his brother Scotty was a shortstop on the 76 team, I think that's correct.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so it was just fun to be out there and reminisce about that. But it's about pitching. Throwing the right pitches in the right. Everybody in our league can swing the bat. So I'm really excited, and I'll also be at Globe Life Field if you need somebody to cover it for you next weekend.
There you go.
Yes. That's my birthday time, and my wife has been kind enough to commit to going to at least the first two series.
Well, it's really nice that's what Cindy gets for her Valentine's is a trip to Placement Park, and then Tex gets his birthday at Globe Field.
We will pass your information on to Adam in case he needs a correspondent at Globe Life for the games.
If he needs one, I'll be there sitting right behind home plate where God meant me to sit. So one last thing, being married to a basketball player, last night a couple observations from her.
Uh-huh.
She played for Coach Campy, anyway, those people that don't know. And she said, we're never going to get anything really running consistently. The defense is running to our spots before we're actually going to our spots. It's just as if they knew exactly what we're running. And she counted four times when we're on offense and Vanderbilt had four guys within 1 to 2 feet of the lane. They had the lane covered.
Oh, yeah. You got to back it in against us and say, let's see if you can hit a shot.
Backed it in and just never let. So if we can't make baskets, you can't win. And then in the end, that's it. And I don't understand because I've seen them. They at times, they're unbelievable. You know, I saw a three landed from the pretty close to the logo in the middle and then never took anyone. I think he needs to – Bedford needs to be farther back, is what I think. I think he's too close. He needs to go back outside and get farther away and start shooting at it. I think he's a good kid. And Hall, I met him at the preview of one of the football games with the coaches. And tremendous young man. I would be surprised if he gets down. He seemed to be the kind of kid that has a great deal of confidence in himself, but I believe he'll bounce back.
Auburn
not
sure needs
what
him too.
The problem was yesterday, but yeah. So anyway, I appreciate it. I know you got a lot, Bill. We'll see you on Friday at 5:30.
Well, you won't see me at 5:30 because I'll be on the air till 6. Although Dan may let me out a little early.
Yeah, we got coach done in the
house.
Well,
that's cool. I may be doing part of the last half hour from the park then.
Hey, Bill, I'm coming right down past that way from the lake to go to the ballpark. I'll pick you up.
Well, all right. I mean, it's not the ride. It was
Bill
just
should have, Bill should have a car by then.
Yeah, hopefully.
But you know what? Right. Hey, Bill, you got to worry about parking. Maybe.
You're right. Friday, absolutely got to worry about parking.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Tex.
Thanks, guys.
Great stuff, man. All right.
I wondered after the – and we'll get to Pat in just a second, but I wondered, Adam, after after Tennessee, like how many of these that strategy Tex just described, teams are going to pack the paint, they're going to dare Auburn – to either...
You're crazy if you don't.
Well, either try to navigate a really crowded lane or hit jump shots over the defense. And, you know, I sort of agreed with Steven about how many times the defense had been the problem of late. Defense wasn't the problem last night.
Yeah, no, that was the most, like, just kind of shaky. And I mean, I don't know. It's been a streaky offense. I think that's a pretty fair assessment. The streakiness has been the consistency, but, like, you've just never kind of seen it like that. I mean, to the point where, you know, I understand a lot of people were up in arms about Keyshawn Hall not getting in those last 12 minutes, but Elijah Freeman, like, they looked like a different team without him out there. And it's you know, it's so weird sometimes looking at this team because I think you've got a lot of great shot creators, you know, guys who can find and make their own offense, especially in Keyshawn Hall and Tahad Pettiford. But when you're historically this system team and running that sort of offense, you know, it felt like they kind of reached a point where they had sort of figured all that out, and after last night and after kind of the, you know, the game plan Tex was laying out, yeah, I think you've got to go back to square and figure out what's next.
Let's get back to the phones. We got time for another one before our final break here this afternoon. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I think Jason was exactly right about it's Keyshawn Hall, and I don't know that it's necessarily his fault, but he just doesn't finish. I mean he was four. Well, I don't know what exactly we were 4 for 18, but
he was 0 for 8.
Like, he was 0 for 8 from 2 in the game.
Yeah,
but he would normally drive in, and then he would, if he didn't get the foul, he would usually score. But now he's not getting the foul, and he's not scoring. And when he's shooting, he's not even getting close. I mean, it's like some of his shots just went like 2 feet over the rim. When it looked like he normally would have just laid it in. So I don't know, you know, if it's just a weird thing, but I know when he got hammered on that one play, and then he went down, and I think he made the block on the guy, and I thought it was a good block. Even if it wasn't bad, you know, it got knocked out of bounds. Usually you wouldn't call that a foul. I mean, it was fading away out of bounds. I mean, So it was like within a 10-second span, he got the raw end of both sides that you would normally, I don't think you would have called a foul that got on him, and then you wouldn't have called a foul on what Keyshawn did. So I completely understand why he got mad, but I think that Stephen Pearl should have got a technical right there. I think people are saying, you know, Bobby Knight, whatever.
Throw the chair? You think you throw the chair right there?
Well, no, but I definitely would have went out there and I would have screamed at him, and I'd have got another technical, and I would have got 4 free throws, and I would have let that referee know, because I think the way he did it, the referee kind of says, well, you know, he's just not happy, but I don't really care because, you know, I made the call that I think I should have made. Whereas if the coach would have said, I agree with my player, you are completely wrong, and take 1-2 right then, instead of waiting 10 minutes and then getting a technical when it was too late.
Well, you know, the thing is, I don't know how late that second one was. If it had come right after the trap on the sideline, mm-hmm. that's when I thought, all right, he's going to go ahead and get one here. But it was 2 trips later and 5 mm-hmm. points later.
Is it the call, the foul on Sebastian yeah. on the
yes.
trap? Is,
yeah.
yeah, that's, yeah.
Because you when you watch huge, the replay of that, it was like, what? So I can see losing it there.
Three.
But, yeah, you're.
Yeah, that little point guard guy. He just fell down.
Yeah.
He reached his arm around Sebastian's, you know, thigh, and then just fell down. We didn't really contact him. But so that was a completely terrible call. I mean, this year, you know, Jason said that, you know, it kind of reminds me of 2 years ago, Auburn football. This year reminds me of this whole season. football and basketball has been just a screw job in terms of, like you think about the Oklahoma game where we got the play that we should have never counted, that their touchdown, they should have never counted, we should have won that game. We got the Georgia game where we score that touchdown and we're up 17-0 and probably games, it's probably Auburn game. Then you got the Alabama game where Bediako gets to play, but then the next day he's ruled ineligible. It's like
right.
It's like we're getting like just the worst luck of, we're just getting the worst of, and it's not even our fault. And it's like people are like, oh, you don't complain about the refs. But I'm like, the last game, Chow's completely had two technicals that should not have been called. But we got three technicals. So in the last two games, we basically have seven technicals that we normally don't even get a technical. And so, you know, I don't know. It just
I don't know what you do refs. Other than play through it when it comes to the officiating. Because I don't think there's anything Auburn can change.
No, there's nothing you can do. But it does suck.
You know, and I know you were there, Pat. Like, I do think that if you're looking for a silver lining, I thought the second half featured some of Tahad's best basketball of the season so far, and I think that's what Auburn's going to need if they're going to avoid a spiral over the next couple of weeks. Is Tahad finding his rhythm and his groove, and like that lost amid the Keyshawn Hall of it all in that final 12, 13 minutes. It was some of Tahad Pettiford's best and most inspired play of the season.
Yeah, well, if we can, like I said, I keep saying the same thing every time, but if we can ever get it all together at the same time.
Yeah, waiting for everything to click and have multiple players. It's overdue.
Yeah, exactly. And that was my, I guess my number one thing is it's not like we just have inferior players and we're just getting beat. It's like we're having bad luck, a string of bad luck and bad. You know, it's like we're just getting the shaft on some of these. Just like Bediako, we would have won that game. I mean, that's just a game we would have won. I mean, it's just like oh my God! It's like can the curse, you know, get taken off of us for a second? And it's almost like our players have to just fight through it just to get us over the hump. And I feel like, you know, at least we've got five games coming up that we're definitely going to probably win.
If you start, you know, hopefully we're not talking about umpires very much this year, because if you start in August, right between the football season and men's basketball,
oh, just give us a weekend or two.
We've talked about the officiating a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm just exhausted from it. Screaming, and then the ref makes a call, and you're like, "Are you kidding me?" It's like we're about to make a momentum. We're about to get it going, and then you just kill it. You just kill it, and that's what Shouse did, you know, in the Alabama game. Every time we started to get a roll, it's like he did something. There was a play that where KO got a great strip on their point guard, and then he called it a foul, and our guy never touched him, and it should have been out on them. So it's just like the refs just drive me crazy, and especially I'm glad that Major League Baseball is doing the pitching thing, because that just kind of takes the umps out of that. But
Pat is ready for the robots. He's ready.
I can't stand it.
It'll be tough in basketball. A little bit tougher in basketball.
Pat's ready for the robot. Yeah. Hey, buddy, we're up against the break. Great
all
stuff.
Right, thanks, guys.
We do need to get to our final break of the show. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Wednesday Drive.
Backyard Dreams and Design is proud.
1-390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes here on the Wednesday edition. Bill and Dan and Adam Cole of the Montgomery Advertiser here in the studio with us as well.
Adam getting ready to start covering baseball pretty extensively with the season starting on Friday. By the way, I don't know if we mentioned, but baseball on Wings 94.3.
That is right.
You can catch Andy Burcham and the rest of the gang. Jason will be doing color on Saturday.
Yeah, because Andy's on the road to Fayetteville, so he'll be out Friday and Saturday. He'll be back in on Sunday. So, yes, I believe John Cohen with Brad on Friday, and then Jason on Saturday.
How cool is it that John Cohen puts the headset on, like the sitting AD?
Well, you talk about, he does have a little baseball background.
He does, but it's very cool that I get the feeling he does the AD stuff just so he can put the headset on at the baseball games, you know, just so he can, because he's his own boss at that
right.
point. He gets, you know, he's making those kind of calls, but no, it's so football, men's basketball, baseball, Tiger Talk, all on Wings 94.3. Happy to encourage folks to tune in whenever you can.
And it's going to be all basketball and baseball on Tiger Talk tomorrow night. as well over on Wings 94.3. Adam, before we run out of time, let everybody know, I mean, what, you know, what all you're doing, how people can continue to follow you.
Yeah, no, if you're looking to go straight to the source, just montgomeryadvertiser.com, and it's just two clicks away. All you got to do is click sports at the top, and there's a little drop down for Auburn, and you'll have everything you need. And if you're looking for me directly, just social media, Twitter, TikTok, wherever, at Cole Reporter. That's my last name, C-O-L-E, and the word reporter.
Easy enough.
Easy enough.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fun week. I mean, not necessarily fun when you lose your third straight basketball game, but basketball, with all the football opportunities we've had here over the last week, getting to meet the new assistants has been cool.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really like, this is like, we talk about overlap season sometimes of like baseball or basketball bleeding into baseball and football bleeding into basketball, but this is like really like peak with all three, and the, you know, getting to meet the football assistants has been really cool too. I've been really impressed, especially with just a lot of what has come over and followed Alex Golish from South Florida. I'm going to be really fascinated to see how it all plays out once they finally take the field.
Man, thanks for stopping in.
Yeah, no, happy to be here.
Great stuff, buddy.
You're welcome back, as we were talking a little while ago. So yeah, we'll do it again.
We'll catch up with Adam Cole again very soon.
All right, Dan, good luck tomorrow in the Trojans' bid to move into that first place tie.
Yeah, have a great show without me. I'll be back on Friday to preview Arkansas and talk a little baseball, and we'll maybe share some of this audio that we've gotten from the football coaches.
We have plenty. Yes,
over the last couple
of
days.
Coach Don Dunn will be in tomorrow, so hope you'll join us for tomorrow's show. But we're out of time here on the Wednesday Drive. That's going to do it for today. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.